You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
And cometh!
Oh, Garth.
Oh, what?
I did but see it passing by in many video reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I love it till I buy.
Oh, God.
I'm in love, Garth.
Are you?
I am in love.
Oh, congratulations.
I have been reading about, watching videos,
yep,
getting email updates every day,
okay,
and I'm just obsessed with one game.
All right. Is it Monopoly Gamer?
No, it's not Monopoly Gamer.
Is it Twister?
No, it's not. Very different from Twister.
Right. Okay, well, tell me what you got.
I'm going to talk about it later on in the show as a new hotness. The first copy of it has hit the streets. The second Kickstarter is now gone absolutely berserk.
Mm-hmm.
Some of you will know what I'm talking about. It's Seventh Continent.
Yeah, it's pretty massive.
It's going gangbusters, and I'm going to talk about that in this episode, Garth, which is...
Episode 185,
oh,
and today is the 5th of October. So, what have we got on tonight's show, Mark?
Well, not only are we going to talk about the game that I've fallen in love with, haven't even sighted a physical copy, but
no?
I'm just head over heels, all the flutter.
I just want it. I just need it. I just want it. I have to have it.
That's right. We're also going to talk about a game we've played lately,
yes,
Role Player.
Have we ever?
And then it's school holidays at the moment.
I know. It's great. Except I've got my kids home a lot,
yes,
so that's great as well. I get to be at work, so Jo, my better half, she gets to look after them, which is awesome.
Yes.
But we're going on a little holiday this weekend where we go to a house which has no TV,
oh,
and no internet.
Oh.
So we need...
No Wi-Fi.
No nothing. We need to take some games. So we're going to have a chat about what games I need to take in the limited car space that I have to be able to keep everybody happy. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
I just want to make everyone happy. I always do. And that's just me. But anyway.
Well, it sounds like we've got a whole lot of stuff to talk about.
We have got so much. And this week's episode is proudly presented by Area 52.
Woohoo!
So thanks so much, Area 52. Now, we should go to a song because we don't have any other time. We've got to get into the song so we can come back and talk about Role Player, yeah?
Absolutely. Let's do it. Do you feel like a smoke after that one, Garth?
No.
Me either. But that was Siggy's by the Foxy Morons, a fantastic Tassie act here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh and proudly sponsored by Area 52, our friendly local gaming store. And Thursdays, what's on Thursdays, Garth?
It's comic book day.
It's comics day, always on Thursday. So get in there for your comics, your pop figures, and, of course, board games. Now, Garth.
Hello.
Speaking of board games and role-playing games.
Yes.
We've been playing a game that sort of combines two of those things, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of like a board game and an RPG just went and had a baby and still made a board game out of that. But the board game was all about how to create a character in your D&D setting, because we are talking Role Player, which is a game that came out in 2016 after a successful Kickstarter campaign,
mm-hmm,
made about 50 grand. So,
yeah,
you know, it's okay.
Pretty decent for, I don't know if it's a first-time designer, but I certainly hadn't heard of Keith Mataker before. Has he done a bit, has he?
Not much, to be honest.
Yeah.
He's done some solo variants for established games, and he's done a few other bits and pieces, but Role Player would be fair to say he would consider his first and most well-known game.
Oh, he's certainly done very well then.
He has. So what is this game, I hear you say, apart from a love child of RPG creation and board gaming?
Yeah.
Well, it's a dice game, Mark, and we all know how much you love dice.
Well, we're here at the Dice Men, we're all about the dice.
Indeed. So look, the way it's going to work is each player...
Mm-hmm.
is going to be their own character, and the goal of the game is to make your character the best possible iteration of whatever it is you may be.
Yes.
You've got player boards. There are four of them. They're double-sided, so you can have a whole bunch of different races. You can have male or female characters, which is great. But in essence, your player board is where you will be doing everything. Every single thing in this game.
Yep.
Because it's got 6, 12, 18 square holes where you will be putting a lot of dice in there. Mm-hmm. And all of those are going to be your skills. Now, you know what strength is. You know what dexterity is. You know what constitution is.
Yes.
You know what your intelligence is, Mark?
Oh, yeah. It's very high. 18 plus plus plus.
Yeah, I think 111 in that case. Wisdom and charisma. So you've got your 6 main stats, and you're going to be trying to get the best possible number for your character so that you get the most VPs.
Yes. And this is very much your sort of old school, because I haven't tried 5th edition yet. So it's very much your old school sort of like 3rd edition.
Mm.
With your 6 D&D stats. And even I noticed the racial modifiers are the same as the 3rd edition, 3.5 edition, where, for example, your dwarf gets extra constitution but loses a bit of charisma, or your elf gets extra dexterity but loses a bit of... I can't remember what it is.
Well, the dwarf loses, charisma, and then you've got the human that doesn't have any modifiers. They're just consistent.
Yeah.
And look, that starts getting you into the theme of this game, which is I want to play a chunky dwarf because I do, or I want to play an elegant elf, or I want to play something that is going to be in that D&D style universe because there are heaps of potential options. You'll never use all the player boards because there's more player boards than maximum players in the game.
Nice.
The game will start after everyone has chosen one of those, then dishing out the race cards. Sorry, not the race cards, the class cards.
Yes.
Okay, so the class cards are going to be, again, your standard tropes, your monks or your paladins or your wizards or your sorcerers or your rogues.
I was lucky enough to have a bard and it gave me an excuse to sing all night.
Just letting everyone know out there that is a horrible way to spend 2 hours of your life. But yes, you can be a bard, Mark. It just means we'll have to have an optional expansion, which is earplugs for everybody.
I was going to say, I think I might get barred the next time we play.
So anyway, you'll get your class cards, and all of these class cards are then going to have the attributes that you are trying to score during the course of this game. So say you are a monk, you might be kind of strong because you're a warrior monk.
Yeah.
And if you get a score using your strength modifiers of 18, meaning you would need to have 6 and 6 and 6 out of the 3 dice in that row, you're going to score a certain number of victory points.
Yeah.
You're going to get scores that you need to achieve for all of your 6 main skills. Some of them will be worth lots of victory points, up to 4 or even 5 in some cases.
Wow.
So if you're a warrior who's all about strength, it might be you get 4 or 5 stars for maxing out your strength.
Yes.
But you might have skills like charisma or dexterity, and if we're talking Mark, it'll be charisma, where you might only need to get a score of 14 or more with the 3 dice, but you might get 1 victory point, which is kind of not worth going for if you want to be buffing your dice and putting them into the skills which have the higher return on investment.
Yeah.
So you get your class cards. They've got a little bit of flavor text, but what they also do is have your own character unique ability. And that'll apply whenever the conditions are met, you'll be able to do it. And it might be when you do this particular action, you get some gold. Or when someone else does something else, you get it to do a free action.
Yes.
Or a whole bunch of different combinations that we're not going to go into. But each of you will get one of those. Again, those cards are double-sided, so you can choose your character because the cards are dished out randomly, but at least you've got a little bit of control.
Yeah, so there's a lot of choices all up.
Exactly right. You then get your backstory card. Now, your backstory, to be honest, I've read the backstory cards.
Yeah.
But the main reason you're using it for is it's going to be another way for you to score victory points, because what it has is this top-down view kind of the dice slots in your player board, and it just has coloured squares, and the goal is you want to get the right coloured dice in the right section. The more coloured dice in the right sections equals the more victory points you're going to get at the end of the game as well.
Yeah, I mean, it does add a nice little bit of theme if you want to think about it that way.
That's right.
But of course, because they are random, and then because I'm sure the next thing you're going to talk about, which is your alignment chart,
yeah,
is random, you get some strange combinations.
You sure do. So, yes, before we talk about those strange combinations, the alignment card is the last one that's dealt out. And that is, you know, your lawful good or your lawful evil or your this or your that. But it's basically random. And again, it's this little 9x9 grid. Everyone's alignment will start neutral right in the middle square. and you'll have a little cube that'll move around as you play the game, and primarily as you use some skills that you will earn through the course of the character creation or the campaign as it goes. But yes, thematically, you end up with a whole hodgepodge of characters.
Yeah.
And some people, particularly your more hardcore role players, will go, well, I can't have this combination. It just doesn't work. But who cares, really? Because it's mainly just good fun.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I know the first time I played, I had a paladin.
Yep.
Who was also a maniac. And so because of where the stars were in the...
The class?
No, the alignment.
Oh, the alignment one, yeah.
Like, I got the most victory points for being lawful evil, which is really just manipulating the little cube to get it on that spot.
Correct.
So I was a lawful evil maniacal paladin. But then my backstory was like a really goody two shoes. Yes. So, but as you said, look, it's all about chucking some dice and having a little bit of fun. That's for sure.
So let's talk about those dice, because you will be chucking fistfuls of them, especially at the start of the game. Everyone's going to draw dice out of a bag, of which there are 73 dice.
Yeah.
And they are not tiny little dice. They are big, solid, chunky dice that come in about, is it five different colours from memory? No, it must be maybe even seven different colours, sorry. But yes, they are going to be a random smattering. You just drag them out of your dice bag and everyone's going to start by just rolling them all and choosing to put the dice that you've rolled in each of the skill sets, starting from left, working your way right, and going through there until your player board is, let's just say, about a third of the way full, might be only a quarter on lower player counts. Then the game's going to start. First player's going to go, roll some more dice, and the game begins in earnest. Now, that is where it's very, very simple. It's a little auction mechanic where the dice are laid out smallest pip count up to largest pip count.
Yes.
Cards in the middle will have some gold on them to make them a little bit more appealing. First player gets choice. They can choose any number, whether it be dice number 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. But there's a bit of a strategy to that, because the dice you choose will impact the next phase in the game, which is the market phase, which is where you buy all those cards that will become very, very important. The reason the cards are very important is because really you don't generally score the majority of your points by buffing out your character the way your class or your backstory needs to be. It's generally about the traits or the armor or the skills or the weapons that you accrue during the course of the game. That's where you're going to score a lot of the points as well.
Yeah, and it's sort of, I mean, I've seen in the first game, because we were sort of feeling our way through it, I only managed to achieve about 2 out of the 6 attributes. I got the right score. But yeah, you know, I had a complete set of armor and a couple of those trait cards that give you extra bonus points at the end. Whereas in the game we played Tuesday night, mm-hmm. I thought that I had got all 6 of my traits absolutely perfect. Until, of course, I realized I had forgotten about those little racial modifiers that are just written small on the card.
They're not particularly small, case, it must be said. Yeah. I can see them still from here, and the box at the game is at home. So,
okay. Anyway, I forgot those, and so I ended up only getting 4 of the 6 correct. But that was a whole bunch of victory points.
Yes.
Whereas you said those, particularly those trait cards, which pretty much all relate to different end game scoring things, are going to give you a lot more. And you know, talking about the market, I really love those trait cards.
They're
because
great.
Things like, you know, I don't think it's called dimwit, but it's like you get bonus points if your intelligence or wisdom is less than 8.
Yes.
Now, obviously, you're trying to score maybe 14 or more to match your attribute, but that might only be worth 1 victory point to do that, whereas to meet the goal of the dimwit card and get less than 8, that's going to give you 2 victory points. And there's a whole bunch of different combinations of those.
Exactly, because the other thing we haven't talked about is in each of the skill sets, every time you place the die there, it's going to allow you to start modifying your character. And by that I mean, if, for example, you put a dice in the strength skill, every dice you put there, it'll allow you to flip any dice that's already on your character board from one side to its exact opposite side, so you can modify it. Dexterity allows you to swap 2 dice around. Constitution allows you to modify 1 of your dice up or down. Intelligence, you just re-roll 1 of your dice and put it back the way it's landed. Wisdom allows you to modify that that alignment chart that you've got. So it's not something where you're just always at the beck and call of the dice that are rolled at the start of the game or at the start of each round by the respective first player. It really becomes a solo puzzle about what dice do you buy,
absolutely,
where do you place them, and how are you ultimately going to get the most victory points on every single move that you're making.
And this seems to be an increasingly large genre, this dice manipulation genre. Because
yes,
there's the dice rolling aspect, but then it's all about, okay, where can I put this dice to maybe change another die?
Mm-hmm.
That puzzly bit is what I really enjoy about this game.
Exactly. And the thing that is, it's just constantly engaging, is that you're limited in the dice that you want to move around, because according to the backstory, I need to have a red dice in this particular section to get some points. So I might want to modify the dice number, but I don't want to modify its placement. So I need to be really, really careful which skill I'm buffing on this particular turn so that that red die either increases or decreases or becomes a better number somehow.
Yeah, or if I use my dexterity, maybe I'll swap it with a different red die
I
can keep that colour the same. It's just, and that backstory card is almost like leading you astray.
It is.
Stopping you from sort of min-maxing those numbers because you're trying to also match the colours.
Yep.
And then there are some of those other, I remember there's a trait card that gives you bonus points for if you manage to get three of the same colour across or three of the same number. But all of those things are fighting against, but I need it to be 17. But how can I have three of the same colour because that colour seems to be really rare? And then there's also, I'm a monk and my colour is purple, because monk and probably bard, I think, are purple.
Yes.
And so you get a bonus point for each purple die. But, you know, each time there may be no purple dice out in the five that you go to
choose. Or the player to your right always takes the dice you need, Mark.
That's right.
Oh, you did that a lot on Tuesday night.
But then there's that whole, you know, the market mechanic where because the dice are in lowest pip to highest pip, and that's influencing your who goes first in the market.
Yep.
So if you want to, like a lot of the time in the game on Tuesday, I was taking the fives and the sixes.
I know you were, Mark.
But that also meant that mostly I was going last or second last in the market and getting the not so good stuff. I mean, I'm missing out on the sets of armor because they would get taken early.
That's right. So look, with the market cards, there are generally four main types that you'll be buying, and there's always going to be enough for each player. You deal out players plus one number of market cards at the start of every round. So there are traits that we've talked about, which are almost always exclusively end-game scoring, as long as you meet criteria. So there might be, like you say, I think it's the Nimwit card. Nimwit, Dimwit?
Dimwit.
Something like that. So if one of your skills is less than
maybe.
Eight. Yeah, Nitwit maybe. But there's a whole bunch of cards that are worth anywhere from sort of one victory point up to four or five.
Yeah.
You've got weapons, which are both one and two-handed, of course, and they will give you modifiers as well. So I had a spear, I think, on Tuesday night, which meant every time I purchased a card, I took a dice from the market space that already had gold on it, I got another gold for some reason.
Yeah, well, I had a jeweled dagger, which, so one of the, you've got six colours of dice, and then you've got that seventh colour, which is gold.
Mm.
Every time you place a gold dice in dices. Every time you place a gold square thing with dots on it into your board, you get one extra piece of gold. With my jeweled dagger, it made each of those dice worth one more than was actually the pips on the dice at the end, which almost threw me out because one row had two gold dice in it and I almost like overscored it, which almost never happens. I think it was like 20 points or something.
Wow.
And I had to get rid of another dice out of there to make it go back down. But the variety in those weapons is great, and some of them affect end of game scoring. I know there's a mace where every time someone discards a card from the market, which you can do to get gold, the person with the mace also gets a gold. So it brings in really nice little interactions between players.
I was going to say the same thing. It's one of those really – the market phase is really where the majority of the interaction happens because – you've bought your die, and obviously when you're buying the die in the order, you're trying to keep an eye on the market to go, well, I really need that because it's a piece of armor that combines my set, which will mean I'll get more victory points, or that's a skill that I really need. But anyway, we've talked about traits. We've talked about weapons. You've got armor. Armor comes in sets. The more of the same set of armor that you get, the more victory points you get, and it does favor certain alignments or characters as well. So there's bonus points. And then you go to the skills. Now, the skills are the more... they're the ones that are used every single turn. So you have to tap them, and every time you use a skill, it's going to affect your alignment. So, for example, you might have a card that is a skill that allows you to do a bonus action or to take some gold or to do some damage or something.
And it'll have a little arrow next to it.
It'll have an arrow pointing left, right, up or down. To tap it, you need to be able to move your alignment cube in that direction. If you can't do it, you can't do the skill. So it's one of those other things where, in this case, placing one of your die in the wisdom section allows you to modify your alignment.
Yes.
So everything comes together in this puzzle that you've got to try and keep your head all over.
And there's also even, so each card in the market has a price, but some of them, as well as having a price, you need to manipulate that alignment cube in order to buy it. And if, unfortunately, you've sort of backed your alignment cube into a particular corner and you can't move any further in that direction, you can't even buy that card. So whilst the alignment cube thing is not particularly thematic, it's another interesting little puzzle part.
Yeah. So, look, this plays 1-4. So it is definitely a game that you can play solo. And when you're playing it, you go, this is all about me, this is the decisions I'm going to make. And look, the other players are important because they're going to be the ones who take the dice that I want or buy the market cards that I want. But obviously, it's all on you what you do with the dice that you're able to get and where you place them. So it's a heavy solo puzzle that you're trying to be figuring out.
Yeah, and look, to give people an idea about the dice, so I was trying to think, oh, what's another game with these big chunky dice? And Alien Frontiers for me came to mind. So think Alien Frontiers size, maybe even slightly bigger.
Yeah, I was thinking they're a little bit smaller than Quantum Dice. So
yeah, I haven't seen Quantum in real life, only on BGA.
Yeah, and you don't like
they're big and chunky, that's for sure. So you get 73 big chunky dice, these lovely player boards with the holes in them, and everyone likes to fill in holes in player
boards. So anyway, we've got to wrap this up.
Yeah, yeah.
Game's great. There's an expansion that was out on Kickstarter that absolutely killed it. I didn't back it because I didn't have the base game at the moment. I need to say thanks to Mark for getting this game for me. Thank you.
Oh, Garth, you deserve that. This was your special little gift for being such a wonderful travel agent and getting me safely to America and back again.
Exactly. I clearly wasn't good enough because he gave me a game that wasn't quite complete.
Oh.
There were 3 gold dice missing, and Mark tells me that he didn't take them.
No.
So anyway, we did a little bit of BGG snooping and managed to find that it was a known issue in some retail copies.
Yeah.
I shot off a quick geek mail to Keith. Within about 6 hours, he had replied saying, really sorry. Within 12 hours, he'd sent me a second email saying, here's the UPS tracking number. They're on their way.
Wow, that is fantastic.
Just a big shout out to Keith for not only designing a really enjoyable, fun game, but really quickly backing up the customer service when there was a bit of an issue. Because as well as designing the game, he's also the head of Thunderworks Games, which is the publisher.
Oh, so nice.
Obviously, he's got a very heavy interest in keeping his customers happy. So that's it. I've talked about it for more than long enough. Mark, I'll leave it to you now.
Yeah, look, I mean, I really enjoyed it. Who doesn't enjoy chucking fistfuls of dice? It also has the role-playing element where you're building a character. And I think we all sort of commented, hey, wouldn't it be fun one day to play this and then take that character and use it in a role-playing scenario?
I particularly like that idea because I really don't like character creation too much. I don't enjoy it, but this I do. So I'm looking forward to it. Not to mention I'm 2-from-2 with the wins.
There you go. Role player, back with more shortly.
Well, there you go. That was Lance Cooper with Fuse, another local Tassie act. It's all Tassie all the time.
We're going all Tassie all night tonight.
That's all right. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, I did all the talking last break.
You did.
I'm going to sit back, chill out, open a beer. Mark, you've got some hotness that you want to talk about that you teased at the intro.
I did. This thing is so hot. It is sizzling. And I have not being able to take my eyes off the screen. Every day this week I've arrived home, sat down, to just calm my heels for a few minutes after a long day at work. And normally what I do is I flick on YouTube and I'll have a bit of a look at, maybe a Stephen Colbert or if there's a new tabletop or, like some little 5 or 10 minute thing from YouTube just while I'm sort of chilling out before I think about what I'm going to do for the evening.
Sure.
Every night this week, I have pulled up a video review or afterthoughts or component drop or something about Seventh Continent.
Now, are you proud or you're embarrassed by this level of obsession?
Well, look, I
guess I'm asking, do you switch to incognito mode when you're searching for Seventh Continent? Is it something that you don't want anyone to see on your browser history, Mark?
No, not at all. Look, I guess, though, I haven't felt like this about a game for a long, long time, if ever. I just don't know that I've had this level of excitement about a game. And it's like, so Seventh Continent was a Kickstarter. Well over a year ago, the very first Kickstarter came out. Mm-hmm. And it was talked about as a discovery game, as an exploration game or a dexploration game.
Yep.
Where you're building a continent, the Seventh Continent, which there's been a lot of consternation about, because I think it's how in Europe, particularly around the turn of the last century, Antarctica wasn't sort of referred to as a continent. So there were six continents, and then this mystery continent was the seventh, of course, which is where it's got its name from. Because it's set in the early 20th century, exploring, and supposedly, Garth, you've gone out traveling to this mysterious seventh continent.
Sure.
You've done exploring. You've come back, but you've been struck down with a terrible curse. And the only way to get this, to lift this curse, is to go back there, uncover what the curse actually is and how to lift it.
Okay.
And revisit your exploration. But you mysteriously wake up after a dream to find yourself on the seventh continent, and you don't know where you are.
Dun, dun, dun.
All you know is you're on this one little card and you have to explore.
Sounds like a good
This is the premise,
yeah.
And, you know, it's very much, it's based on, this game is based on the choose-your-own-adventure, fighting fantasy type of books where you really, the story unfolds with each choice you make. Now,
but it's those on steroids, really. I mean,
Of course. That was its inspiration.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, it can be solo or up to four. And look, I'll tell you what, I'm having serious solo thoughts about this, because supposedly there are hundreds of hours of gameplay. Still getting over my lurgy.
Yeah.
Of gameplay in this game, because there's a large number of different characters. Mm-hmm. They all have special abilities. So each time, you know, the game will be slightly different with each of the characters.
Sure.
Then there's also, from the first Kickstarter, I think there's five different curses. So that's sort of like five different stories.
Sure.
But it's very much a sandbox that you can play in, because the board is built by these cards. And the main mechanic is exploration, mm-hmm. where you're on one card and it'll tell you, okay, if you want to go this way, you then place these encounter cards in the areas you can travel to. They're randomized, and then once you do that encounter, then it'll tell you which card to put as the next part of the map. So this map is actually fully formed. This seventh continent is massive, continental even. But then there's also these random encounters. So if I start on card number one and I move north this time, I'm going to have a certain encounter. If I play the game again and I start on card number one and I move north, I could have a whole different encounter, because these encounters are random. So level of replayability.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's as I said, there's the five curses from the original game. Did I mention there's a second Kickstarter game?
I don't think anybody knows that there's a Kickstarter with the Seventh Continent on, because is anyone backing it this time?
As I said, the first one raised, I think it was 1.2 million euros.
Wow.
With 12,000 backers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that game took about, I think it took about a year to come out. So people are only just receiving their games now. Leon has the original version of the Seventh Continent.
Yep.
We haven't got it to the table or anything. And I did sort of badger him for a while, because I was quite excited about it just from that first Kickstarter. But then the second Kickstarter has come out, which is basically combining a couple of expansions. It's called What Goes Up Must Come Down.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's got a couple of expansions. You've got a balloon you can travel over the seventh continent in, very much in the around the world in 80 days mold, you know, similarly a turn of the century thing.
Sure.
And then you've also got a bargee.
A bargee?
A bargee.
Oh, a bargee.
Yeah, which is, if you think...
Like an onion bargee?
Indiana Jones, when he had the thuggies and they were in the cart in an underground river, traveling down. That's a bargee, I understand. So
All right.
You've got these two expansions, one in the sky, one underground. And each of those has a new curse. So now we're up to at least 7 curses.
Wow.
So that's 7 different games. And then a few more people have backed this than the first one. So obviously you can back just the expansion, or you can back the original game without the expansion, or you can back everything, which
yes.
is, of course, what I've backed.
Of course you have.
Because I want it all, and I want it now. So what did I say, 12,000 people backed the first one?
Yep, about that.
So far, with 2 weeks still to go, almost 24,000 people hell. Have backed this one. Oh, now, obviously, a huge amount of those are going to be the people who got the first one and want the expansion.
Sure.
But, you know, now, in terms of dollars, it's up to, I think it's getting close to 2.6 million. In fact, you've just brought up on the screen, thank you, 2.6 and a half million. So
yep.
heading towards easily 3 million. With
and the rest.
With still 2 weeks to go.
Leon and I think, mentioned this last week, and it was 1.8.
Yeah,
there you go. So it's almost earned $1 million yep. in a week.
And like I mentioned to you, the emails, I've been getting at least one email a day
mm-hmm.
with a new stretch goal unlocked. I've lost count of how many stretch goals there are. And then another email usually with like a bit of content or something else. So there's so much information. It's the number 8 game thematically on Board Game Geek.
Yep.
And the ranking is 8.98, or it's rounded up to 9 on the front page.
Mm-hmm.
The only other game, I think, in Board Game Geek with a ranking of 9, with a sort of a large number of votes, large enough to be significant, is, of course, Gloomhaven.
which I should get some point before Christmas.
Well, I'll get to that in a minute. So just back to the Seventh Continent. So you're exploring. It's also a game of survival because the hit point life counter mechanic, if you like, in this is a deck of action cards. And each time you do things, you have to do a test. But it's not like a lot of games where you're doing dice rolls for attribute-type tests.
Sure.
With this one, you have to reveal a certain number of cards. You can always reveal extra, but you have to reveal a certain number of cards, and that's mandated by the test. And these cards will have none, one, or more stars. And the test will say you need to reveal this many cards at least, and you need this many cards to succeed.
And is that just a random, just flipping cards off the top of a deck?
Or? No, so you're drawing cards, okay. You flip over, and on one side of the cards you'll have these stars. Some of them also have a lucky 7, and I think if you have particular items, the 7s will count as successes.
Okay.
But then not only have you used these cards to determine if the test was successful or not, but you get to keep one or more of these cards depending on your hand limit, and you can give them to your other players as well depending on their hand limit. But then that same deck, the action deck, is also your life. So you want to draw these cards because you want to get this stuff, and each character contributes a few cards into this action deck that are sort of specifically designed for you.
Gotcha.
And if you get those ones, you get to keep them. But then there's all these other sort of random ones. There's all these other items that you can build, but it's also your life force. So in a way, you want to be drawing more cards because you want to get good stuff and you want to succeed, but you don't want to draw more cards because if you ever run out of cards in the draw deck, you basically shuffle the deck up again, but now since it's now the discard deck shuffled, in this deck are also the curses.
Mm.
If you ever draw a curse after it's been shuffled the once, you automatically die.
Oh, it's like the facehugger in Alien.
Exactly.
And there's also the mechanic like Pathfinder, which is
decreases
your health.
And that's right. And so that ends the scenario. So now one way you put cards back in, apparently, because...
Just reminding you, this is not what we've been playing, Mark.
No, I haven't even played it.
I know. I'm just saying, we'll be doing this whenever we play it. So you don't need to say every mechanic in this
no,
game.
But you've also got to survive. And to survive, you've got to eat food and hunt. So apparently, hunting and getting food lets you basically put cards back into the action deck. But this whole action deck, you know, it's a fantastic little mechanic. We've seen it work in other ways in different games, but to me it looks fascinating because there's that dynamic tension of I want to get the stuff out of there, but I need to keep cards in there because I'm going to run out. So look, I could go on and on and on, but finally, and similarly to This War of Mine, this game has a save mechanic.
Yes.
Now,
which is great because there's a crap load of game in this.
Well, I was going to say, you know, we're talking hundreds of hours, but probably one of all the only complaint that people had about this game is the length that it takes. Mm-hmm. But it very clearly sort of sets out in the rule book, and a lot of reviewers say it, that really it's designed for you to play in sort of 1 or 2 hour slabs, and the save mechanic is really quite simple, so you can set up again from a saved game in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, cool. Okay.
And but the other thing is sort of saving is also a bit like a reset, because you have your central card and then any encounters that are there will be re-randomized. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like, oh, I think it's going too bad. I might save it because when I come next time, it's going to be a little bit different. Okay. So whilst the map doesn't change, the encounters that you come across while you're exploring the map do. So look, I don't know that I can say any more about this except that I started to think between this and Gloomhaven, which hopefully our copy, Garth, will arrive next month or so.
Yeah, I'm hoping before the end of November. I should have a chat to Isaac about that.
You know, and that has hundreds at least.
Yeah, at least 95 different campaigns in it.
That's right. Mm. So between these two games, there's hundreds and hundreds of play hours. I may never have to buy another game again, Garth.
I think what we need to do is find an anonymous backer who would like to fund our extravagant lifestyle so we can give up work for a year and just spend a year playing Gloomhaven and Seventh Continent.
We could have a whole new podcast.
Yeah.
But look, I have just been flummoxed by this game. I'm totally intrigued.
I thought the tattoo was a bit much, but I'm sure you'll never regret it.
Look, and the thing is, I haven't watched really any gameplay videos because I don't want to spoil it. Because it's so spoilery. I mean, each card you turn over just spoils a little bit. Although there's a great video by Trick Track, the French board game website, where that I think was used in the very first Kickstarter campaign, and it's sort of like the promo, and it's got a little island. It's quite funny because the guy, I don't know his name, but the French guy who runs Trick Track, who's got the most amazing beard, he's brilliant. He's got one of the, I think he's got the social media manager of the project on there playing with him. And then one of the designers, did I mention they're French designers, Ludovic Rudy and Bruno Sauter. Now, it's their first real game. I think they've
got no other time to do anything else with the amount of content they've created.
And the art is by Ludovic as well. So he's done all the art and he's one of the co-designers. It's published by Serious Pulp. Look, if you haven't heard about this one, you must have been living under a rock, that's for sure.
Yes.
But, you know, the second Kickstarter has 14 days to go. Not that you need to get on there and back it because, man, it's so overfunded, it's not funny.
Well, that's the thing. If you haven't backed it, ask your next-door neighbour. They probably have.
That's right. But, as I said, I have not been intrigued by a game like this for a long, long time.
I can tell. That's why we've got to. That's why we've got to do one more break and then go and play Pandemic Legacy, which we're going to do, so we can finish that one out of the way. Because by then we'll have Gloomhaven. By the time Gloomhaven comes, then we'll probably have Seventh Continent. Yeah,
there's not enough hours. So much gaming, and I guess all these games tie in. You know, we talked about storytelling just a couple of weeks ago, and how much we love storytelling.
Yep.
These amazing storytelling games are just coming out, and they're so good. And the stories are so interesting.
I want to play them. I want them to be good. The hype train. You're clearly on it.
I am well and truly on the hype train for the Seventh Continent.
All right, let's throw to a song. We'll have a quick break before we then go away and play Pandemic Legacy, which is still the number one game of all time. Anyway, you're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Mark, play the song.
And we heard all about Bartholomew's Bed from Andrew Marshall. One more Tassie Act, Garth, here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh and supported tonight by Area 52. If you love your Funko vinyl pops, get in there for those, as well as board games, card games, comics, manga. They've got books.
They've got everything.
They have got so much that you nerds and geeks, who we all know
and love,
some of you like to listen to this show. If you're in the local area, drop in and see Area 52 and say, the Dice Men sent you.
Definitely. Now, Mark.
Yes. Before you talk about your holidays, Garth, your school holidays, I wanted to do a quick shout out to Dr. Professor Steve Blessing.
Dr. Professor?
Professor Doctor.
Wow.
But he's not a Dr. Doctor.
No, he's a Dr. Mister.
Dr. Doctor.
Ah,
he's a psycho.
No, okay,
he's not a psycho. He's a psychologist.
Okay.
He's a professor of psychology, and he has a very interesting little podcast that I stumbled across, and I thought, look, it'd be good to give it a shout out because, look, we don't really know much about what we're talking, do we? We just sort of get on.
Well,
and
I do.
We mumble a bit each week.
I'm on a panel
week.
At PAX talking about it with other luminaries of the gaming industry.
We mumble along each week talking about games. Well, here's someone who is an absolute expert in his field, which is, of course, cognitive psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how some areas of cognitive psychology apply to different games. So the podcast is called The Cognitive Gamer. You can check it out on iTunes. It's only new. It's also nice little short episodes, only about 20 minutes.
Okay, good.
So I've listened to all the episodes so far, and I have found it fascinating. So shout out to Dr. Professor Steve.
Is he funnier than us?
No, very, very deadpan delivery.
Oh, well, that's all right then.
Sometimes I think he's reading out of a psychology textbook, but very fascinating. So look, if you're interested in psychology and games, get your Cognitive Gamer podcast on your various ways of getting your podcast, just like you can with us, iTunes and other podcasts.
So while you're on there, you may as well give us a 5-star review, hey?
That would be perfect.
Cool.
Now, Garth.
Yes.
Enough from me. Tell us about your holidays, and more importantly, tell us about how you're going to fill those days and nights with no screens.
I know. So, yes, it is, in this day and age, very rare to be going off-grid and going to somewhere that is only a short drive away from sleepy old Hobart. But it's an island attached to a smaller island, attached to a larger island.
Yep.
But there's no TV. There's no internet. It's about 5 metres from a beach. But it's going to be raining, so we're going to probably spend a fair bit of time inside. And I need to take some games for my own sanity, for my family's enjoyment, for a bit of fun bonding time.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's just going to be the four of us together for these couple of days. And I want games that are kid-friendly. My daughter's 7 on Saturday.
Oh,
part of
wow.
the reason for the going is her birthday. All the way up to the ancient mum and dad, me and my other half Joe, who are both 38. So we need something that's going to keep everybody happy.
Yes.
Now, the one caveat I'm going to have for this very quick discussion is we cannot mention Sushi Go.
Because your kids love it already?
Exactly. And we talk about it every time we mention kids' games. So although it's on the list, it's off the list.
Okay. So what's on the list?
So I recently bought them Happy Salmon.
Yes!
They love it. My kids, being my kids, love the silent version of Happy Salmon more than the yelling version. So that is where they are not saying a word. They're not going, pound it, pound it, pound it, pound it, pound it, pound it, or Happy Salmon, Happy Salmon, Happy Salmon. It's where you just make the actions with your hands and everything happens in silence.
Oh, Garth, so this is so you.
This is the sound of us playing the game. That was me just doing the Happy Salmon shake with my hand, which is great because the kids don't make noise. I was also thinking that the kids are at the age now that I can take Survive, which is a brilliant game.
Yes, yes.
Joe loves it, but you can scale it back to be kid appropriate by really just not bothering to look at the numbers at the bottom of the meeple that you're trying to save.
Just every make meeple, one meeple is equal 1 point.
Exactly right. Good theme, beautiful board. I've got the 30th edition, so it's component-wise fantastic. And for mum and dad, really, really interesting as well. So that's going to keep everyone happy. Oh, cool. I'm really, really, really happy to take that.
Well, look, let me throw in one.
Yeah,
and
go there.
I'm sure I'm sure you won't mention it because I've got your copy at the moment. Because, you know, I've got a new partner.
Oh, is this Seventh Continent again?
No. This is the other love of my life. And I've been introducing her to games. Now, she loves games but hasn't seen a lot of our type of games.
Sure.
So we've bought out the old staples, Ticket to Ride, Machikoro, Carcassonne, and, you know, I had forgotten how much fun they are because I probably haven't played those games in such a long time. So, of course, those ones are awesome.
Well, I was thinking about Machikoro, but yes, you do have my copy, so that won't be happening. Hey, That's My Fish. Hey, That's My Fish. Beautiful little penguin minis. You're competing penguins trying to eat as much fish as you can before the island melts. Thematically appropriate with global warming. Joe and the kids both love that one. And it's a small box, so it's really easy to fit in there. That's fantastic. I'm actually thinking I'm going to take just Pandemic. Standard Pandemic.
Yeah. So have you ever played that with your kids?
No. So I think they'll enjoy it. I think the theme is good. In fact, in that we're, you know, trying to save the world.
Yeah.
It's a co-op, so we can work together.
Yeah, and it's not really scary because you don't really get into any graphic detail about you know how diseases are eating away faces of people or making their eyes pop cubes. Out. Or
and particularly my son.
Well, you could.
Yes, my son loves co-op games.
Ah,
so he perfect. Will have a great amount of time. In a similar vein, I've got Burgle Brothers on the list. Insane, big, chunky dice. They love King of Tokyo. So I think I'm going to have to cull my options. Otherwise, we'll have to get a trailer just for the games.
Yes.
So these are just the games that I'm going to be taking from my collection. We'll take Happy Salmon. We'll take Survive. We'll take Hey, That's My Fish. I think we'll take Pandemic just because I want to give it a go.
Yeah.
And they've said we have to take King of Tokyo.
Well, I was going to say, do you have, I mean, if you're talking about Pandemic, do you have Forbidden Island and or Forbidden Desert?
No. I have not even played either of those.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to remember whether I sold my copy of Forbidden Island. Otherwise, I can lend that to you. I may still have it. I don't know. But, there's an awesome version, which is quite similar to Pandemic, created by the same guy, Matt Leacock.
Yeah. Smaller box.
But small box or a tin. Nice big chunky cards, the little plastic minis. I'll have a look and see if I've still got it because I can't remember if I kept it or if I sold
know Trent,
it.
I think Trent might have a copy, but I don't think I'm seeing him until then. Well, anyway, I think that's about it. I've got heaps more games on the list, but we're only going away for 2 nights.
Yeah.
So I don't want to go overboard. But anyway, if you've got any other suggestions, please just send us an email at dicemencometh@gmail.com. Put something on the Facebook page. Send us a tweet on Twitter at @dicemencometh. Stick a photo on Instagram of a game that you love playing with your family. #dicemencometh. We'll read it and I'll see if I can find the game. Is that it? Is that all we've time for?
I want to hear from any of our listeners who have got their copies of Seventh Continent and, you know, is it everything you thought it'd be? Am I just a dumb passenger on the hype train, or you know, is it all that it's wrapped up to me? I'd love to hear that. Well, I mean, we'd always love to hear from you. We'd always love a 5-star review on iTunes, of course.
Thank you.
And thanks so much again to Area 52 for supporting us this week. But Garth,
yep,
we've got to go and finish our game of Pandemic Legacy. Until next week. See you later.
Bye.
This has been another episode of The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, offering comics, books, card games and board games for the whole family. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart or online at area52.com.au and find us online at thedicemencometh.com.